Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, what is going on? And welcome to WWE Rivalries on the WWE Podcast on this Friday, December 11th, as we are officially 2 weeks away from Christmas. And a good show we got for you today, as the most recent rivalry I've ever covered. Well, ever. We're what, 17 shows in now to this rivalries adventure that we've been on since the middle of August or so. But yes, the most recent rivalries I've ever covered, as we are going back to 2016 of AJ Styles versus Dean Ambrose. And I have a lot to get into, but before, as always, I like to give my thoughts on the current product. And I guess we'll start with Monday Night Raw and what is going on there. As I said last week, Raw has been very strong as of late. And I like what they're doing at the top of the card with Drew McIntyre and Sheamus, and teasing that heading into TLC with AJ Styles and Drew McIntyre scheduled to headline that pay-per-view, at least from a Raw perspective. And I gotta say, they are utilizing all the tools at their disposal right now on Monday Night Raw. And I said last week how I thought that they basically stole all the upper mid-card talent from SmackDown at the draft, and they are just running away with it right now, because guys like Sheamus and AJ Styles, these are guys who have been in the upper mid-card for over a year right now, but have main event potential. And, you know, I think it's pretty likely that Drew McIntyre retains the championship here, going into coming out of TLC and going towards the Royal Rumble. But I wouldn't exactly guarantee it, because AJ Styles, I've said for a while here, he has a main event run left in him. By and large, he has been, I don't know if underutilized is the right word, because he was used over on SmackDown to elevate the Intercontinental Championship, and he had the short program with Jeff Hardy over that. But I still think that AJ Styles has a lot to give at the main event level. And if there was a guy to take the belt off of Drew McIntyre right now, which is kind of weird to say because he just got it back less than a month ago, it would be AJ Styles, because obviously Randy Orton had it for, what, a cup of coffee, and he obviously isn't going to get it back anytime soon, if ever. The Fiend Bray Wyatt, he's not in the title picture at this very moment. So aside from that, it may be AJ Styles, because I don't think Sheamus is that guy. Like, I think, again, Sheamus is a guy, much like AJ Styles, who has another main event run left in him. But just the way they're positioning him right now, I don't think he would be the guy to take it off of Drew McIntyre. But ultimately, I do expect Drew McIntyre to retain the championship and then plunge along to Royal Rumble. And I think that's where he will eventually get on a collision course with Sheamus heading towards the Royal Rumble before we get on the official road to WrestleMania. But either way, I'm really looking forward to this AJ Styles match with Drew McIntyre. I think, you know, not to use the good old catchphrase like WWE always likes to, but I think they will tear the house down, as I don't think these guys have ever faced off before one-on-one, and they've often been on opposite brands. As we know, AJ Styles spent a lot of his time on SmackDown since he came over to WWE in 2016. And look, he's a former two-time WWE champion, so they have that to draw from here. But I do think ultimately Drew McIntyre will retain the championship. But I like how they've intertwined a bunch of different storylines into the main event scene. Like, obviously, you have The Miz lurking with the Money in the Bank contract. I really don't know what they're going to do with that. Look, I like The Miz. I respect what he's done, but he has become extremely flat and dull and just kind of boring. Ditto with John Morrison. Like, the thing with those two guys is that they are very sophomoric, and their shtick is just so stale, and it's the same thing each and every week. But there's something there with those guys. I do find them mildly entertaining. It's just that, unfortunately, whether it be Vince McMahon or creative as a whole or a mix of both, when they see something that is working mildly, they just have to beat it to death and shove it down their throats. Like, and I think this all started when John Morrison first came back and these two guys were over on SmackDown and they started the whole, you know, like, Miz and Morrison, hey, hey, ho, ho. And it was kind of funny. But at the end of the day, they were in-ring wrestlers first. But then they did the whole music video and the album. And now all they do is kind of act like, I think Matt has used the term like 16-year-old boys and trying to be the class clowns, like something like that. And I just think if they pulled back on it a bit, they would have a lot with the Miz and Morrison. But either way, they still are good in the ring and they are still reputable wrestlers. So it's good that I like to see that they're still being utilized in the upper mid card. And then, as I mentioned, they have Sheamus tying in there. So that whole title scene picture on Monday Night Raw, I really enjoyed. Another thing, you have Keith Lee lurking, and I assume that before Sheamus gets to Drew McIntyre close to the Royal Rumble, him and Keith Lee are going to have a showdown, most likely at TLC. And those are two guys where I really think their styles would mesh well, especially if they make it a gimmick type of brawl match. So I'm looking forward to that. And then obviously you have The Fiend and Randy Orton. And, you know, I'm maybe not as high on this as a lot of other people are, because I don't get the end game here. Because usually when The Fiend is done with someone, they change. And it's kind of like the blow off, and then we see a major character shift in that one guy. But with Randy Orton, it's kind of like he's just in a holding pattern until Edge inevitably returns. And I don't know how we're supposed to believe that after all these guys who have faced The Fiend have changed. Like, you know, we saw what he's done to Alexa Bliss and The Miz and Braun Strowman and how all of their characters changed in some fashion. I don't know if they're really going to make Randy Orton's character change all that much when all is said and done with The Fiend, because at the end of the day, he's still going to be pitted against Edge and they're going to draw on their past history from less than a year ago. So I don't think that this was the time to do it. I'm not saying that I don't want to see this. I just don't think The Fiend versus Randy Orton was what we needed right now, especially since The Fiend, or Randy Orton rather, is just kind of spinning his tires and in lockstep until Edge comes back and they inevitably have a rematch clash at WrestleMania. Over on SmackDown, look, it's more the same here as what I said last week. I like what they're doing at the main event level. I think Kevin Owens is the right guy for right now for Roman Reigns, and I think that they can have a lot to draw on here. I think that eventually Roman Reigns will come out the victor, and I don't expect Kevin Owens to even have a possible chance at getting the Universal Championship. But it's beyond that program where I'm starting to get worried. You know, now reports are surfacing that they're going to do Goldberg versus Roman Reigns this year, you know, try and have the match that was originally scheduled for last year's WrestleMania. I'm so sick of Goldberg, guys. Like, you know, I didn't mind him back in the day in the, you know, when he was in WCW and when he eventually had his initial WWE run in 2003. And even when he came back for his initial return in 2016 and he had that short-lived run with the Universal Championship, had those sequence of matches with Brock Lesnar that culminated at WrestleMania 33. But it's enough now. You know, after that catastrophe that was his match with The Undertaker, it's too much. They got to stop this. Just enough with Goldberg. You know, I've seen some takes that, well, if Roman Reigns squashes Goldberg, that a lot of people wouldn't mind it. I suppose, but is that what we want from a WrestleMania match? We want to see Roman Reigns squash Goldberg? Like, yeah, sure. Like, Goldberg would almost deserve it. And in some weird way, I'd like to see that happen. But, you know, for a WrestleMania match, which will likely be the main event, especially where they're positioning Roman Reigns right now. I don't think it's any secret that they view him above Drew McIntyre. And that's no slight on Drew McIntyre. They are really high on Drew McIntyre, as they should be as the WWE champion. But Roman Reigns has always been the golden boy, and he is just on an unstoppable run right now. And I fully expect and believe that he will be the last guy and the last championship and the last match you will see at WrestleMania. Would you really want it to be like a squash match? And even if it isn't a squash match, we know how Goldberg operates. You know, he's not going to have a five-star match. And not to say that we want to see five-star matches all the time, but his matches are just boring. Like, look, I'll compare him to Brock Lesnar. I love Brock Lesnar matches, but a lot of people will say, well, Brock Lesnar and Goldberg have almost the same amount of matches. I would argue no, because Brock Lesnar is a hell of an athlete, while Goldberg, I don't know if he can do any more than the spear and the jackhammer. We know that Brock can, you know, take bombs, he can sell just as good as anyone. And yeah, obviously he often just resorts to, you know, the German suplexes and the F5s. But when you watch a Brock match, it's believable. Goldberg, it's just so like dull and predictable, and you know what's going to happen. And they're always less than 3 minutes. Like, at least Brock, sometimes he will go 10 to 15 minutes, and he can. As opposed to Goldberg, where you saw it with The Undertaker, sometimes it's just an absolute disaster in there. And if you guys can't tell already, easy enough for me to say, I am no Bill Goldberg fan. I have zero interest in seeing him. And I'm not saying that it has to be Roman Reigns versus The Rock if the Goldberg match eventually doesn't work out and ultimately doesn't come to fruition. But it just, anything but that. Anything but Roman Reigns versus Goldberg. I still think that the money match is Drew McIntyre versus Roman Reigns to headline WrestleMania and kind of have a rematch from that absolute brilliant contest we saw at Survivor Series. But again, I don't know how they get there, especially with Drew McIntyre holding the WWE Championship over on Raw. And the only thing would be is if he dropped it between now and the Royal Rumble, and he won the Royal Rumble and used that right to cross over to SmackDown and challenge Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship. And the rest of SmackDown, again, there's too much inconsistency throughout the rest of the card here, and I'm really starting to sour on the SmackDown product beyond the Roman Reigns main event picture. Because look, when your second tier rivalry is Baron Corbin against Buddy Murphy and his now henchmen that are the Mysterio family, like, that's not good. It's just not good. And look, as for Buddy Murphy, how sad is it that they cannot just let this guy have his own singles push? Like, why don't they just let this guy go off on his own? And look, being saddled with Rey Mysterio, or with Seth Rollins originally, was absolutely the right call for his career. And Seth Rollins did absolute wonders for him in building his character and getting a good reputation and being legitimized as a single star. But now he broke away from Seth Rollins, and you have to assume with the birth of his child, Seth Rollins will be away for a couple months. But now he's saddled with the Mysterio family? Like, I'm not going to dive into yet another Mysterio family rant, but my God, could we just do away with these people? Why does it have to be a thing? Like, if it was Baron Corbin versus Buddy Murphy, I would be fully invested in it, because Baron Corbin is another guy that is just criminally underutilized, especially for how good of an athlete that guy is. And I like Buddy Murphy. But now you have the Mysterio family just lingering in the background. Like, that's what they are. The Mysterio family are lingerers. They are the people that just aren't invited to the party, but just always show up and just linger there. And I don't know why they're still around. I don't know why they're accompanying Buddy Murphy to the ring. I don't know why we're supposed to find it acceptable that a guy in his mid-30s is dating a teenager. Like, I don't get it. And you know what? And I'm just going to give my 2 cents quickly on something. I think in some weird way, WWE doesn't even want to get back in front of a live audience. because this is the kind of angle that would get them booed out of the building. Like, there is no way that the majority of a live crowd would be backing the Mysterio family to this point. Like, they single-handedly ruined the Seth Rollins Messiah character. And that's saying something, because when he first started down this road, right around this time last year, he was arguably the best heel in the company, because Randy Orton hadn't done his turn yet on Edge, and Roman Reigns was still a babyface. I guess you could argue The Fiend, but he was over on SmackDown. So Seth Rollins was the top heel in the company, at least in my mind. And then he had so much heat going into WrestleMania, Kevin Owens rightfully got the victory over him. After that, had a quick 1 month long program with Drew McIntyre, and then it just all spiraled out of control because he was wasted with the Mysterio family. Like, not with Keith Lee, not with a guy like Matt Riddle, not with AJ Styles, not with Sheamus, not with any of these top upper mid-card guys that could have benefited from going up against a guy like Seth Rollins. No, it was wasted on by the Mysterio family. And another thing, do you remember a few weeks ago, it was probably over a month ago now, when Seth Rollins interrupted Daniel Bryan, and we were fine, and at least I could speak from my perspective, I thought that we were finally going to see a Daniel Bryan versus Seth Rollins program, or at least a sequence of matches, maybe culminating at a TLC or what have you. But no, instead of seeing these two square off, two guys who, by my recollection, have never had a one-on-one match, at least since Seth Rollins disbanded from The Shield, they, instead of having a quote-unquote dream match between two of the best in-ring competitors, Rey Mysterio and Dominic Mysterio just come running out, stick their heads in where no one wants them to be, and once again take up the time of Seth Rollins. All these guys are doing are ruining promising feuds and rivalries and programs, talking about the Mysterios. And we're seeing it again with Buddy Murphy and Baron Corbin. And what are we going to see tonight? What, on SmackDown? What, a six-man tag team match with the Forgotten Sons and Baron Corbin versus the Mysterio family and Buddy Murphy? Like, I don't want to see that. Like, you know, Baron Corbin and Buddy Murphy could be involved in the Intercontinental Championship picture. But no, we have Sami Zayn, who struggles to get on television most weeks, holding the second most prestigious championship in the company. But no, we have to give the time to build up the Mysterio family for some unforsaken reason. Like, I've said this before, I'll say it again. Rey Mysterio is my least favorite wrestler and character in the business right now. And to me, he's tainted his entire reputation by bringing his entire family. Oh, well, that's not entirely true. They've left his wife at home, thank God. But no, they keep trotting his whole family out, minus his wife. And for what reason? Just to cling on to some form of relevancy? Like, that, at this point, that's what it is. It's just his own ego. Like, that's the only thing that I could possibly assume is going on right now. That his big ass ego, which is kind of ironic given how small he is just forcing WWE's hand into inserting him into some somewhat relevant program. Because aside from that, what would he be doing right now? And why is it, anyway, I'm going to stop myself. I already went on a rant. I'm sorry, guys. But as you can tell, I'm not exactly thrilled as to what's going on with SmackDown right now, beyond the main event, which is absolutely brilliant with Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens. But while I don't like the current product of SmackDown, let's go back to 4 years ago when SmackDown was, you know, off and running, given the new entering the new generation of the brand split, which had been abolished about 6 years prior in 2010, I want to say, and was headlined by AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose. And to give you guys a bit of a history on to how we got to this program, it all kind of started in early 2016 when Shane McMahon returned. And by this time in 2016, like I previously mentioned, the brand extension was long gone. You know, it was officially closed up, I want to say, in late 2013 when they merged the titles, the World Heavyweight and WWE Championship, between a match with John Cena and Randy Orton. But for all intents and purposes, the brand extension hadn't been in actual effect since, I want to say, 2010. Like, they could say that specific superstars belong to one brand, but they were crossing over like it was nobody's business. So we were about at least 5 years removed from an actual true brand split by the time Shane McMahon rolled around. And we know how that turned out. You know, he had the match with The Undertaker, and he originally wanted Power on Monday Night Raw, and he was playing the babyface, and he was having the power struggle with his sister Stephanie McMahon, who was playing the heel, fresh off the Authority gimmick run. And eventually, Vince McMahon said that Shane was going to be in charge of SmackDown, and Stephanie was going to be in charge of Raw, and they were going to draft the rosters and re-enter the brand extension era. And before we got there, there was a match at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view between a returning Seth Rollins and a then WWE champion, Roman Reigns. And, you know, the initial dissension of the Shield was, you know, I guess not fresh, but it was still relatively recent. It had only been 2 full calendar years since that had happened. So you had Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns headlining the pay-per-view for the WWE Championship. But earlier on in the night, the other member of the Shield, Dean Ambrose, had won the Money in the Bank briefcase. And although we thought his night was done, when the WWE Championship match got to take place, we realized that Ambrose's night was far from over. So after Seth Rollins defeats Roman Reigns and wins his second WWE World Championship, Dean Ambrose cashes in the same night and wins his first ever WWE Championship as the Shield members really headline this entire pay-per-view. And at the following pay-per-view, I believe it was Battleground, they had a triple threat match between the three of them, of which Dean Ambrose retained the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. And the week prior to Battleground was when the WWE draft had taken place, of which Dean Ambrose was drafted over to SmackDown, and Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns were drafted over to Raw. So it was almost like Stephanie McMahon betting on one of those two guys retaining the championship, and Shane McMahon betting on Dean Ambrose retaining the WWE Championship, because whoever won the belt would bring it over to their respective brand. So Dean Ambrose retains the title and brings the championship over to SmackDown. But also drafted over to SmackDown was AJ Styles, who was only 6 months in, or about 7 at this point, into his inaugural run with the WWE. And while Dean Ambrose was winning his WWE Championship and having his program with his former Shield members, AJ Styles was engaged in a pretty intriguing feud with John Cena. And that's a rivalry that I will be covering sometime in the future, because the John Cena-AJ Styles rivalry in 2016 was certainly one that doesn't get talked about enough, much like the HBK-John Cena one that I did last week. So AJ Styles was legitimizing himself as a top-level heel, while Dean Ambrose was legitimizing himself as one of the faces of the company and a top babyface. And this kind of came to a head following SummerSlam, of when both of the storylines over on Raw and SmackDown both started taking their own specific paths. Because at SummerSlam, the first pay-per-view following the brand split, well, I guess it was technically Battleground, but that was only a week after the brand split, you had Dean Ambrose retain his WWE Championship against Dolph Ziggler, and AJ Styles defeat John Cena at SummerSlam in one of the best matches you'll ever see. Really, go watch the AJ Styles John Cena match at SummerSlam 2016. And in total, that was a brilliant pay-per-view top to bottom. SummerSlam 2016, you know, you had AJ Styles versus John Cena, Randy Orton versus Brock Lesnar, the first and last time those two ever clashed. Dean Ambrose against Dolph Ziggler when he made his first ever WWE Championship defense as an exclusive member over on SmackDown. Then you had, on the Raw side, Finn Balor defeat Seth Rollins to become the first ever Universal Champion. Just an all-out great pay-per-view. So following that fantastic SummerSlam pay-per-view, they had to find a new challenger to Dean Ambrose for the WWE Championship. And this was a time when they still had the brand exclusive pay-per-views, or rather they had just gone back to the brand exclusive pay-per-views. And the brand exclusive pay-per-view following SummerSlam was SmackDown's Backlash. And Backlash was going to be interesting because it was going to be the first brand exclusive pay-per-view in, I want to say, 10 years. Because they first started abolishing that in, I believe, 2006 or early 2007. And they were really trying to build up SmackDown at this time. Because when the brand extension got abolished and all the superstars were floating from show to show, Raw overtook SmackDown. And that's just the way it is. When there aren't two specific separate entities, Raw will always kind of cannibalize SmackDown. Just, you know, out of nature. Because at the end of the day, Raw is the flagship show. You know, whether or not they try and build up SmackDown, as SmackDown went over to Fox and they've really tried to build it up over the last calendar year as arguably a bigger deal than Raw because of the network it is on, Raw will always be the number one show for the WWE. Like, most people, even if they're not wrestling fans, know Monday Night Raw. Not all of them know SmackDown. And a part of that is because of how many times SmackDown has changed nights. You know, it was originally taped and aired on Thursdays. Then it was aired on Fridays. Then they went to SmackDown Live. Now they're back on to Fridays. You know, just because of that alone, it has always kind of taken a backseat to Monday Night Raw. But when they first went down this new era of SmackDown with, you know, Shane McMahon at the helm, Daniel Bryan as the GM, and Dean Ambrose as the world champion of the show, it ushered in a new era where they were trying to make SmackDown feel just as important as Monday Night Raw. And this was the whole SmackDown Live era. You know, it was the first time ever that SmackDown would be live each and every week. And it was aired on Tuesdays, the night right after Monday Night Raw. So when the first ever brand exclusive pay-per-view rolled around in this new era of SmackDown, you knew that whatever match they chose to headline the show would be a big deal and a big crucial part of WWE's creative for the SmackDown show going forward. Because like I said, they were doing everything in their power to make SmackDown feel just as important on Raw. But the question was, following SummerSlam, is who would be Dean Ambrose's next opponent to challenge him for the WWE Championship? And you got to remember, they kind of stacked SmackDown when they first did this draft. You know, they sent John Cena over to SmackDown before he became a quote-unquote free agent and can float between both shows. They had Dolph Ziggler on there, The Miz, who was the Intercontinental Champion and arguably on his best run of his career, including his WWE Championship run. You know, The Miz was a super hot heel at the time. You had Bray Wyatt, you had Randy Orton, Kane, as Kane was still a full-time competitor. So they had a lot of talent to choose from to be the next in line to challenge Dean Ambrose for the WWE Championship. But they ultimately decided to go with AJ Styles, who had just concluded his long-standing program with John Cena getting the big win over him at SummerSlam. And this was right around the time when AJ Styles started using the face that runs the place quote that Shane McMahon used to describe John Cena when he drafted him over to SmackDown. And he was really building himself up as a top heel in the company. But like I said, only about 7 or 8 months in at this point. So it was kind of, you weren't really sure if WWE was going to strap the rocket pack to AJ Styles, especially given the fact of how many top level talents were over on SmackDown. But they ultimately made him the next in line and the number one contender going into the brand exclusive pay-per-view to challenge Dean Ambrose for the WWE Championship. And look, when they made him number one contender, I was very excited, but I said, look, Dean Ambrose is only 2 pay-per-views into his first ever reign as world champion, and he's bringing SmackDown into the new era. I believe he was their first overall draft pick, as Seth Rollins went first to Raw, and then SmackDown used their first pick to pick Ambrose. So you really were led to believe that that Ambrose was going to have a significant run with the championship, be booked as the face of the blue brand. But when the pay-per-view came and the match began to unfold, we got surprised with the outcome. So with the referee knockdown, AJ Styles kicks Dean Ambrose between the legs, hits him with the Styles Clash, and captures his first ever WWE World Championship. And look, I was really surprised with this outcome because I wasn't completely sold on AJ Styles yet, even though he had just defeated John Cena, like JBL alluded to at the previous pay-per-view. But it was more just the fact of you really were led to believe that they were going to put the full rocket strap to Dean Ambrose and completely push him as the face of the blue brand. And, you know, as they should, you know, I really thought that the crowd was fully behind Dean Ambrose. And among all the 3 members of the Shield at the time, I thought he was the most popular. You know, Seth Rollins was a full-blown heel. Roman Reigns was a babyface, but we all know how he has been received over the years as a babyface. And Dean Ambrose had won the Money in the Bank briefcase, rather, and cashed in and got a massively positive reception over it. But nevertheless, they decide to push AJ Styles, and it's really hard to argue with, because over the succeeding 2-3 years, he became arguably WWE's most valuable wrestler over that time. And he held the championship one more time after this, and you know, he became the face of SmackDown. And then he started using the catchphrase, the house that AJ Styles built, describing SmackDown. And that's why sometimes I still find it a bit weird to see him over on Raw, because in this era of SmackDown, it just became synonymous with AJ Styles. A lot of that to do with his program against Dean Ambrose. So this story dragged out to the following SmackDown exclusive pay-per-view, which was No Mercy, where returning John Cena came to insert himself into the WWE Championship picture. And there was a triple threat match that headlined that pay-per-view. And actually, I don't even believe that it headlined the pay-per-view, as for some reason, I believe WWE put that match out first on the card. I seem to remember that the triple threat match between Cena, AJ Styles, and Dean Ambrose was the first match on the No Mercy card that year, for whatever reason, as just a bizarre way to book that. And I think that's when Dolph Ziggler and The Miz headlined that pay-per-view for the Intercontinental Championship, I want to say. Or it could have been Becky Lynch versus Alexa Bliss for the SmackDown Women's Championship. But I'm pretty certain that that triple threat match for the World Championship was first on the card. So that this program between AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose spilled even past that pay-per-view, because after No Mercy, John Cena went away yet again, and then they entered the first ever Survivor Series with the SmackDown versus Raw gimmick. And the whole build to that match was, as per usual, could the teams get along with their internal rivalries? And one of the big ones at the time was this one. And both of these guys were on the SmackDown team, along with Shane McMahon, Bray Wyatt, and Randy Orton. And they were two of the first ones eliminated in that match, as Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton were the sole survivors for SmackDown to get that brand the victory. And this ultimately culminated at the TLC pay-per-view in December, which was brand exclusive to SmackDown. But during the build to this, this is when the whole James Ellsworth experience started, and he started getting tied in on SmackDown for whatever the reason. And to this day, I still don't understand what they were doing with James Ellsworth, as he just kind of just never went away. I remember he jobbed to Braun Strowman once, and then he had some random matches with AJ Styles, and for whatever reason, I guess it was the humor behind it, and we all know how Vince McMahon loves to cling to whatever he thinks may be funny, but for whatever reason, they inserted James Ellsworth into this program, and he was actually deemed a number one, he was actually given a world championship match against AJ Styles that he attained with the help of Dean Ambrose, as he got a non-title victory over AJ Styles on a match on SmackDown, as Dean Ambrose interfered and helped James Ellsworth get the victory, therefore embarrassing AJ Styles. So with James Ellsworth with a world championship match in the back pocket against whoever came out as the champion at the TLC pay-per-view, he had a vested interest in the TLC match between Ambrose and AJ Styles. So when the match finally came at TLC, James Ellsworth himself came to the ring.
Titanic,
what their bodies have been through.
An epic battle for the WWE World Title.
Oh, my God.
Here it is.
What the hell just happened?
James Ellsworth just sent Dean Ambrose crashing through tables at ringside.
Did he get confused?
What the hell is going on?
Look at this. Dean Ambrose had the championship. He had it. He's about to walk out of here a WWE champion. And Ellsworth.
What's he doing?
The one that Ambrose took under his wing. The only person in the world that showed Ellsworth any kindness. Ellsworth was the one. And Ellsworth now is cheering for AJ.
And AJ Styles crawling back into the ring.
You tell me we aren't in some alternative universe.
James Ellsworth, too.
Kind of bizarre.
He is 3-0 against AJ Styles. It's bizarre. Maybe just helped the phenomenal one.
Erratic behavior.
He had to be confused or something.
He's not confused, he's cheering.
Styles just climbing up.
Nothing's going to stop AJ.
Here.
AJ's about to walk out here, WWE World Champion.
AJ Styles has the WWE World Championship and retains the title. Thanks to James Ellsworth.
Here is your winner instead, the WWE World Champion, AJ Styles.
So James Ellsworth turns on Dean Ambrose, shoots him off the ladder through two tables, and secures the victory for a guy who hated him, AJ Styles. And, you know, like JBL said, he turned on Dean Ambrose, the one guy who was nice to him, helped him get a WWE Championship match in the near future. And it was later revealed that Ellsworth said that he believed that he had AJ Styles' number and that he did it for his own personal gain because he thought that he had a much better chance of beating AJ Styles for the WWE Championship as opposed to Dean Ambrose. And the following SmackDown, Dean Ambrose came out, hit him with the dirty deeds, and he lost in, I think, under 30 seconds to AJ Styles. And predictably, and AJ Styles retained the championship. And look, after this culminated the rivalry as it put a bow on it, and these two never faced off again. And this was kind of when the dissension of Dean Ambrose started, because he never got back to the main event after this. And he got into a program with The Miz, won the Intercontinental Championship, I think less than a month later. Before the Royal Rumble, he got the Intercontinental Championship. He was involved in the Elimination Chamber match for the WWE Championship 2 months later, but I believe he was one of the first guys eliminated. And then he wasn't even on WrestleMania that year. He had a pre-show match with Baron Corbin for the Intercontinental Championship, and then was eventually drafted back to Monday Night Raw following WrestleMania 33. And then later that year in 2017, had the reunion with Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns and The Shield. But it was too bad what happened with Dean Ambrose, because I really thought that he was going to be the face of SmackDown. And even though AJ Styles won this rivalry and held on to the championship, which he eventually lost to John Cena at the Royal Rumble, I always thought that Dean Ambrose would get it back someday. You know, I'm not saying that he had to be the forever WWE World Champion, and I do think that AJ Styles was the right guy to be the face of SmackDown, at least on the heel side of things. But this was a program, and these were two guys that were easily main event caliber over on SmackDown. But while AJ Styles stayed there, and he eventually had a second run with the WWE Championship that he held for, I think, just about a year, when he took it away from the worst champion of all time, Jinder Mahal, up until Daniel Bryan beat him in 2018. I always thought that they would keep Dean Ambrose there to be the face of the brand alongside AJ Styles and maybe Bray Wyatt as well and Randy Orton. And, you know, you could say John Cena, but, you know, John Cena was later deemed a free agent and then started floating between both shows. And for all intents and purposes, by this point, John Cena was not a full-time competitor whatsoever. But instead, Dean Ambrose just went over to Monday Night Raw, got lost in the shuffle, and never really got past the mid-card, and when he was clearly more than that. And I think this is one of the reasons, among many others, as to why he eventually left the company and is now arguably the top guy over in AEW. And it's just, I look back on this rivalry, and it was one that legitimized SmackDown as a standalone brand in the new era of the brand extension and the brand split, and a time when they were really focused in on making each brand exclusive with the exclusive pay-per-views, which I think they should go back to. And it was a short-lived experience. I think it only lasted a year and a half, as it was abolished following, I want to say, WrestleMania 34 in 2018, and they went back to just the dual-branded pay-per-views for all of them. But I thought that this was a time when they had two guys to lead the SmackDown brand into like its own era, and they just kind of washed it away, and they never really capitalized fully on Dean Ambrose. And this was a program that I felt was one of the best of this time. I think 2016 was a very weird year for WWE. Not a bad year, but it was a year of transition with, you know, John Cena not being a full-time competitor anymore. Randy Orton missed a lot of it due to injury. And I just thought that this was a program that really kept it relevant, especially in a new era of SmackDown. And you could make the case it has been the most important rivalry of SmackDown since they reintroduced the brand split in 2016, because it was the inaugural main event rivalry, and it was the one that legitimized SmackDown as its own separate entity from Monday Night Raw. And look, AJ Styles has for the most part maintained main event status since this program, but we all know how the story ended for Dean Ambrose, which is a shame given how important this rivalry was. Well, guys, that's about all I got for you today. I hope you enjoyed it. The most recent rivalry I've covered so far on the rivalries on the WWE podcast. As always, you can get me on Twitter at ADeMarco25 or email Matt at RealWWEPodcast. But I hope you guys enjoy your weekend. Happy holidays, and I'll talk to you next week.